When I graduated with a BS degree in engineering in 1986, I was the only female in my graduating class at Calvin College. Since then, fortunately, having come back to teach there, the numbers have increased, but not as much as I might have expected at that time, and especially compared to some of the other areas of STEM, where the numbers, as we saw in the previous presentation, have gone up a lot more. And I've been very curious over the years about why that is and what I can do to change that. I wrote a couple papers back in 2006 and 2009 for the Christian Engineering Education Conference, which is sort of like an ASA for engineers that meets periodically. And now I'm sort of continuing that theme and hopefully getting it out to a little bit broader audience here at ASA. So this is a little bit of a micro view because I am focusing on my own institution and some of the things that we are attempting to do to increase participation of women in engineering. So here's what I'm hoping to talk about. I would like to talk about participation of women in engineering disciplines at various types of schools. So look a little bit at the national data in order to see where we're at Calvin compared to other groups of schools. Then talk specifically about retention of women engineering students at Calvin. Report to you some of the efforts we've undertaken to increase retention and maybe make some conclusions about how well those have worked. And then review just a few of the best practices for increasing retention of women engineering students in this whole context of identifying barriers that we need to overcome to get more women to be involved in engineering, and especially an emphasis on why Christians might care. So first picture, where are we at in terms of engineering students who are graduating with BS degrees? So there are a lot of areas of underrepresentation and a lot of things you could look at in the pipeline or in the workplace to see how women are involved. But the sort of metric I'm focusing on is degrees earned and the college experience for students in engineering. And so this goes back to 1990. Obviously, if you extended this line out from previous, you would see a slight incline over time. It looked like we were increasing a bit until we got about to the year 2000 or so. We had kind of a leveling off. And then recently, we've actually had a decrease in the percentage of females earning engineering degrees out of the total number of engineering degrees earned in the U.S. So I didn't have a chance to add Canadian data. But I depended on the American Society of Engineering Education data book to look at different schools that report the number of women that get degrees. So again, compared to some of the other careers we've seen in STEM, where women are almost equally represented, if not more, engineering has lagged well behind. We made it up to 20%, but have decreased, and maybe we're looking at another increase, which is a reason for hope that this trend would continue. The number of engineering degrees over this time has also increased from a range of like 66,000 degrees back in 1990 to 88,000 or so. So there's been a steady increase over time in the number of degrees total awarded as well. And then the question for me was, okay, well, how many degrees do we have earned by women at Calvin as a percentage of our total? We graduate 50 to 70 engineers each year, which is a pretty small number, obviously, compared to the national averages. But unfortunately, we're quite below the national average. In fact, we've only had 1 year where we exceeded the national average. And now with our small numbers, this is a very jumpy line, obviously, because one or two women can significantly impact the percentages. So I don't know how much of a conclusion we can make about the effect of programs and things relative to this data. But I was sort of disappointed to see that at our particular college, we don't have as many women as we do on average at other engineering colleges. So my question is, where are the women engineering students? If the national average is higher, and they're not at Calvin, where are they? So I thought about looking at different types of institutions and averaging out their data. And the first set of colleges I looked at was Christian colleges similar to ours. So those who are members of the CCCU and others who are sort of explicitly Christian in the way they market themselves. There aren't that many institutions that offer engineering that are Christian colleges. There's maybe a couple dozen at most in the U.S., and less of those are accredited degrees, and a few less of those actually report their data regularly to ASCE. So this is sort of a sample. But if you look at my black line here is the national average. since 2003, so I'm just looking more recently, and then here is the average of all the Christian schools that I looked at. Still lower than the national average, which was sort of disappointing to me. And if you pull out, and mostly I show this to you just so you can see the list of colleges that showed up in my average, the data obviously is all over the place. Most of these colleges are smaller than Calvin is, so from year to year, whether you have one or two or three women, it makes a big difference. But I included Calvin, Cedarville, John Brown University, Laterno, Messiah College, Oklahoma Christian, Oral Roberts University, George Fox, Grove City, and then Baylor and Valparaiso. So that's not all of the Christian colleges, but a pretty good representative sample, which contributes to this, again, red average that's kind of below the national average. Well, the other types of engineering schools that I was curious about included other colleges that are primarily marketing themselves as undergraduate and that have a reasonable liberal arts piece to their engineering degree and that are sort of innovative. These are some leaders in the field that I see often, their faculty at ASCE doing interesting things in engineering, and in fact, Olin College has only been around for a few years. They were particularly put together in terms of their curriculum to increase diversity. So again, black national average. The average of these three institutions, which are undergrad-only, heavy teaching priority, give you the red line here. So there are more women at these kind of institutions. So even though they're not faith-based, they share some characteristics with many of our Christian programs, but unfortunately, well, depending how you look at it, women are choosing to go there. Now, the other side of this, though, is that these institutions are also pretty highly selective, so they are able to select from many applicants, whereas most of the Christian colleges are not as selective. We take pretty much anybody who comes and meets the minimum qualifications, and you'll see later that I think that has an impact as well. How about the large research universities? So the vast majority of these engineering degrees are offered at very large schools, like Massachusetts Institute of Technology, University of Michigan, Stanford, Illinois, and Wisconsin, just to pick a few of the top-ranked ones that show up regularly if you look for the best engineering schools. Black line, again, is the national average. There are more women. The red line is the average of those schools at top-tier universities, especially the green line at the top is Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And I think part of the reason that they are able to keep their numbers of women so high is, again, that they are highly selective and they choose to admit by percentage more women applicants than they do male applicants. So they have made a deliberate choice to take more of the women who apply than they do the males who apply, which is very interesting. And again, these are very, very good students who are choosing to apply as well. And then the last category I looked at was the more regional and what I think of as technical kinds of universities. And I picked ones that I'm familiar with in Michigan. So these are historically schools that are very hands-on, that have close ties with industry, often have co-op programs, kind of more techie schools. They don't emphasize liberal arts nearly as much. And if you look at the average of this set, the red line here is below the national average. So women are not so much choosing to go to these sorts of schools. Michigan Tech is the highest line, and arguably they should be in the top research schools, so you could maybe flip their category. But some of these other ones, Western Michigan, they're almost purely technical coursework, and I don't know that women are, it doesn't seem like by this data, attracted to that sort of program. And again, these are less selective schools. So comparing those different sets of data, I came up with three, I'll call them hypotheses because I don't have a lot of data, but they are interesting questions I would like to investigate, perhaps, to decide in the future. My first hypothesis is that participation of women in engineering is higher at highly selective schools because women students who choose engineering are on average better students than the males who choose engineering. And I would say anecdotally, I have evidence for this. If I look out at my students, the women in my classes are almost all very, very good students. So average men think they can be good engineers, but average women do not. And I think that's a problem that we should maybe try to solve if we can. And you can see that, too, also in some of the data at Calvin. Now, these are just a couple of years because I didn't have time to look at every single set of students. But for the incoming class of the fall of 2009, looked at these same groups of students that were still in engineering a year later. The average GPA for the males was 3.25. The average GPA for the females was 3.39. And then for senior engineering students in the fall of 2012, we also see that the GPA for the males was lower than the GPA for the females. I don't know that that's true across the board, but I think it's kind of typical. Hypothesis number two is that participation of women in engineering is lower at institutions where the atmosphere and curriculum are traditionally more technical. So it seems to me that men are attracted to technology, which makes them want to be engineers, while women are less attracted to the technology itself, the hands-on practical competitive aspects of it especially. And that's perhaps because they haven't had a lot of experience with it previously compared to guys who might have. And then hypothesis number three, and maybe this is more controversial, and I don't necessarily have evidence for this except for sort of anecdotal talks with people in my office, but participation of women in engineering at Christian colleges is low, because many may come from conservative families and religious traditions that do not fully encourage professional career aspirations for women. And I will say that over my 20-year teaching career, I've occasionally had women in my office asking me, how will I manage to balance my family and engineering work? How is that going to be for me in industry? I've never had a male in my office asking me about that. The assumption is that engineering will be a great career for them to support a family on. But the women are already thinking that maybe this will actually compete with my family needs, which I think is, again, something we need to maybe perhaps work against in how we sell engineering to students. Now, another interesting thing is that participation of women in engineering varies a lot by the different disciplines. So mechanical engineering, over at this end, which is my discipline, has the least percentage of women as part of that field, as opposed to environmental engineering, biomedical, chemical. The wetter and softer disciplines tend to have more women, similar to some of the sciences, physics versus chemistry and biology. This also might explain why Calvin looks so low compared to the national average, because our biggest programs are mechanical and electrical that tend to have fewer women, and our smallest programs are chemical and environmental civil. So we have kind of a weighting problem in terms of matching the national average. The next thing I want to look at was the idea of retention. Okay, we've got fewer women at Calvin. This is a problem. When they start at Calvin, are we keeping them to the end at the same rate that we are the males? And this is actually a very complicated question, because retention, if you know much about the college institutional level research about this, is difficult to measure. There's a lot of, especially when we have few students, you know, people coming in, people coming out, counting what students are where and when they graduate is not as easy as it might sound. So the first piece of data that I used to look at this for us was what I call pseudo-retention. Pseudo-retention because it's basically taking the number of seniors that register in our Senior Design Capstone course and dividing it by 4 years prior, the number of students who registered for Engineering 101. So a lot could have happened between those 4 years. Obviously, we've got transfers coming in, we've got students falling back a year, you know, doing other things. This doesn't capture that, but it does give you kind of a ballpark idea. So the blue line here is our pseudo-retention for the last 10 years or so, and it looks to be averaging around 50%, which is fairly typical for engineering programs across the country, that about half students who start actually finish with a degree in engineering. At Calvin, that means that only a few of them maybe drop out of college. The vast majority of them, they change majors and graduate in a different field at Calvin. So this is not disastrous necessarily for us as a college. And if they're making choices to leave engineering because they feel God is calling them to use their gifts in a different area, that is absolutely fine with us. But we would like to see those numbers increase. And then the top line is actually the pseudo-retention going in from our first semester fall to our first spring semester for those students. And we've got a really nice trend going upward that we hope bears some fruit later on in the pseudo-retention for the whole 4 years. Now, real retention. So this is much more difficult to track the students who come in a cohort and see what happens to them along the way. So I've done this for one particular class. I'm hoping to take this model and use it for some other classes to see how the change goes over time. But we had 123 students who started in the engineering program at Calvin in the fall of 2010. If we sort of work around this clockwise, we lost 16 of them after the first semester. We lost another 27 of them after the second semester. So the students that had completed a year in engineering, those two totals, at that point, they said they were going to do something else. Over here, we lost another 18 after the third semester in the program. In the fourth semester, students actually apply to the program to be accepted into a concentration. And we lost six, sort of after the first 2 years. So these six students may not have been admitted to the program, you know, having failed a course or having something usually grade-related happen. Often the choices before then are choices not to do engineering because they want to do something else or they're struggling. A lot of other reasons contribute to that. Once they are in the engineering program, they tend to be retained quite well. So we only lose five after that first 2 years up until graduation. So out of 123, we had 46 graduate 4 years later when they would be expected to graduate. And then we have five who have not graduated yet but are still on the path to graduation in 5 years. Now, that's students altogether. If we just peel out the women from that picture, we've got totals. And then the blue bars at the bottom are the number of women. So we started out with 13, decreased down to 11, 8, 6, 5, 5. So we think that after five semesters, five of those women will have graduated. And our total yield rate for the whole class then would be 41.5%. But the yield rate on the women, 5 out of the 13, would only be 38.5%. So we aren't actually retaining our women quite as well as we're retaining our male students, which was disappointing to me. Especially because we have made some efforts to increase retention for our female students. We began, 10 years ago now, to offer a dorm floor for women engineers that they could opt into when they start. It was not required, but of course, at Calvin, starting into the engineering program, probably 1 out of 10 guys are engineers, so the likelihood they have other engineers on their floor is very high. For the women, that's not the case, so we thought grouping them would help. We also provided that dorm with a study room for the women engineers and a teaching assistant. We've done some things with social gatherings to get the women together, to get to know each other better. And I think maybe curricularly, most importantly, we've been focusing on selling engineering more as a service profession, which is not really the way people think of it when they come in. Of course, students come in with all sorts of erroneous ideas about what engineering is about when they come in. A lot of them don't really understand it. Now, the thing about these things we've tried is that we haven't seen a lot of numerical response. Again, the data is really jumpy. It's hard to tell if these programs are effective. And the question is whether they're sustainable, because, of course, the burden to run these is often on the female faculty in the engineering department, of which we're fortunate to have three. But still, we have high workloads already and don't have necessarily the time to devote to this. So we had a donor give us some money, but that doesn't help with sort of the organizational aspects of it, and we're not the kind of college that has a women in engineering coordinator or like some of the big schools do, so that's always going to be a bit of a struggle for us, I think. But we do know from literature presented at ASDE and other places that there are some proven techniques that are good ways to increase engineering student retention in the entire pipeline. So there's a lot of focus now on K-12 outreach. We see more engineering-related courses being offered in high school, which I think is a good way to get into the pipeline. That's not something I'm personally a lot interested in. My focus is much more on college students while they're in school, but hopefully places like ASA can get into those K-12 systems to encourage engineering as a career choice. I think we still have some room to go in overcoming stereotypes in the media of what engineers are like and what the work is like. We don't have Dilbert engineering jobs. Engineering work is very team-oriented, which should appeal to males and females equally. We don't have programs on TV, for example, that show the lives of engineers the same way they do the lives of teachers or of medical professionals or of forensic pathologists and things like that. So we maybe have some work to do to get the message out. Like I was talking about in Engineering 101, a focus on engineering as a service profession and a vocational choice, not just a good, secure career that has challenging work. We have to be a little careful about that, though. I don't want to sort of bait and switch women students by telling them that engineering is going to allow them always to focus on service and to sort of show their Christian impulse to make the world a better and more flourishing place. I mean, the reality in industry is that engineers work for for-profit companies, and often they can become disillusioned, and that may be why, as we saw in the previous data, engineering women tend to drop out of the profession at greater rates than the men do later on. So we don't want to set up that sort of a problem. But I think we can do better in trying to define engineering as not so much about the techie stuff, but as about the people who use the technology. And then finally, one of the things that has been shown to increase retention of women in engineering programs is working to increase their self-efficacy. And self-efficacy is really confidence in your ability to handle the kind of challenges that engineers would face, to have an identity that is engineering related and to feel good about that. And often women take longer to develop that, and we need to make sure that they get the kind of experiences that would reinforce that, where they can be successful in team situations. I've seen studies that show that on engineering teams, when they're doing presentations about their projects, often the men do the analytical parts of the presentation, while the women are doing the introduction and the conclusion and sort of the fluffy parts. And often those teams fall into those roles kind of automatically. And as professors, we need to encourage them to get out of their comfort zones a little bit, so everybody has the chance to expose all of those different aspects to their concern. And then also, one of the few things that tests show that women are poorer at when they come into engineering school than men on average is spatial visualization concepts. And so we need to work, especially maybe with women at the very beginning, when they start doing CAD and 3D modeling and all these kind of things, to give them the help they need to sort of catch up so that they have those skills set to go. Because that can be a big trigger. If they don't feel confident in those skills, they'll turn away from engineering, even though that's not necessarily, it's important to engineering, but it's not the most important factor in determining who's going to be a successful engineer. So I think the next presentation is probably going to address this in a little bit more detail. But for me personally, why do I care so much about having more women in engineering? Why don't I just sit back and say, hey, 20% average is fine. We should take whoever comes and just do our best. Well, I think there are reasons that diversity in engineering would make the world a better place, I suppose. Or these are principles from my Christian worldview that apply here. And I would say increasing diversity in engineering equals allowing more people to serve God in their vocational work as service, to use their God-given gifts and skills. And so the fact that so many women don't have the opportunity, as shown by the numbers, to enter engineering when we have no reason to think that women wouldn't make really great engineers is a problem. There are some people who can't serve God as well because they're not in the right vocation, I guess. And then there's a justice issue in this for me. Engineering is a good profession. It is a good means to earn a wage to support a family. It's challenging, it's fun, it's a way to contribute. If women don't have access to that opportunity, then that's not fair. And then finally, diversity in engineering means better engineering solutions for the world. We at Calvin often talk about sufficient engineering, which means not just things that sort of function the way they're supposed to, but that fit into the entire context of life in ways that make people able to get their potential to flourish, and also the environment and the rest of creation to flourish. And we won't get those kind of engineering solutions unless we have everybody able to participate. So with that, I have time for like one or two questions, if anybody has one. I would say that they are quite supportive, but right now just don't have the resources to, you know, sort of push that any further. Where I'm at has been sort of a grassroots thing. I mean, my male colleagues are concerned about this, but probably not as concerned as I am. And the administration in general maybe is not that aware of it as a problem. And so it's been hard to get this resourced in a way that can sort of get it off the ground and make a real difference. Yes, the Society of Women Engineers, SWE, is huge, and they have a lot of good resources for women students, and they've done a lot to help out. We've tried to get a chapter at Calvin, but we've never quite had enough numbers to make the whole chapter idea work. And the problem with small numbers, too, in terms of like student organizations, occasionally we do get women who are really enthusiastic about SWE and getting a chapter started, but you know, the next year after we have those really excited women, we don't have enough, or the women are too busy participating in the other opportunities we have at Calvin, like the service organizations and the professional societies. So we only have a certain amount of leadership, and it gets spread too thin sometimes. But that's something we probably need to pursue more too. Mm-hmm, sure. The question is, what do women bring to the table in terms of engineering solutions? That's a good question. I mean, women are not the average. So women obviously are across the spectrum just like men are. I think often, though, women are more willing to work collaboratively and less competitively, which I think is a good thing in a team setting, and most engineering design is done in some sort of a team setting. And I think just having more and different voices at the table is better. And I can't say ahead of time how that would make a difference, but I just think that most studies have shown that it does. So it's not just gender, but ethnicity, religion, you know, life experience, economic situation. Having more of that represented on a design team that's making decisions about how a technology is going to work makes it a better technology. Sure. Go ahead. Yeah, different perspectives, I think, could change.
That's coming from some of that's coming from the female way of thinking, and men need to learn that the universe is more rounder than square.
Thanks. Question over there? I think this will have to be our last one. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that's a very tricky question, too. It's a form of affirmative action, I would say. I'm not opposed to affirmative action. I mean, I was a recipient of affirmative action, actually, when I went to Michigan State and started my PhD. I had a scholarship that was exclusively for women because they were trying to encourage the number of women PhD students. So, it would be kind of inconsistent for me to argue against that. I just think that they have to be cautious. I think for them, their pool of applicants is at such a high level that they're all choosing between people who are equally qualified. And so if they decide to choose a few more of the women as opposed to the men, and they're, you know, kind of clear about the intentionality, I don't necessarily see a problem. But maybe the male students would argue against that. I think we do have to be careful that we don't over-preference things, that the process is still fair, regardless. I don't know that we're in a place where we want to be gender blind about things because we feel like we still have some inequities. So, I could see the justice in allowing for more opportunities for women, but we need to be careful. That's a good point. All right, I'm going to wrap this up and turn it over to our last speaker, Janet Warren.